Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one and the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the Internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And Author Magazine is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA and their yearly summer conference at pnwa.org. Well, I have met a lot of writers since I started Author Magazine, and I know a lot of them now, but today's guest, suspense writer Robert Dagoni, I have known longer than any of them. In fact, I met Mr. Dagoni years ago when we were both a couple fledgling novelists attending a Pacific Northwest Writers Association conference, and we later had lunch together, and I right away recognized in him that he had the qualities I felt it took to do this job. He obviously took it seriously. He was committed to learning his craft. He was clear that he hadn't perfected it, but he was serious about learning it. And most of all, I sensed in him that he was not afraid of the task at hand. And I really felt he had those sort of ineffable qualities one needs to have some success at this. And lo and behold, one day, I opened up a newspaper and said something I'd never said before when I read a book review. I said, hey, wait a minute, I know that guy. And I did. It was Robert Dagoni's, the review of Robert Dagoni's first book, his debut novel, The Jury Master. And I did know him, and I still know him, and that's why I'm so glad to have him on the show today. And here he is. Robert, welcome to Author to Author.
Thanks very much for having me, Bill. I appreciate it. And very kind introduction of you. I remember our lunch as well, and it was a good time.
Well, I was telling the truth, and I want to dispense with some formalities. You are Robert Dagoni on the dust jacket, but I've known you all these years, and I've only ever known you as Bob. So instead of pretending and then slipping up, it's going to be Bob from here on out, I think.
No, that's fine with me. I am Bob.
You are a Bob.
I am a
Bob. So, I interviewed you last year, just about this time, for the hardback release of Murder One, which I quite enjoyed. If you
Thank
are
you.
A fan of legal suspense, I do recommend you running out and buying it. It will keep you guessing, as it did me, and I am a professional storyteller. I can usually predict these things. So, but I couldn't figure it out. But you just learned some news. You just learned some news. About that very book, didn't you?
Literally, yeah. I literally just got off the phone 5 minutes ago with my publisher at Simon & Schuster, and they told me that I'm one of three finalists for the Harper Lee Award for Excellence in Legal Fiction Writing. It's given out by the Alabama School of Law and the American Bar Association, and it's really a neat award to be nominated for, even just because, it's my contemporaries, it's my colleagues, and even though I really write thrillers for sort of the masses, it's always nice to get that recognition. So I'm thrilled, I really am, and if for no other reason than if I got the chance to win, you get an autograph copy
you do?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, when did you read it? How old were you when you read it?
I've read that book twice.
Yeah.
I read that book in high school, and I read it more recently in my adult life. And you know, it's one of those books that's just magical in terms of the language. Her description of the heat by showing women with talc powder all over them and dogs laying in the street. It's amazing. It's really an incredibly well written book, as well as being crafted well. But just the language is incredible. So it would be neat. And I feel like it's like one of those people at the Oscars, right? I'm just honored to be nominated. So it's great. And
well, congratulations!
Great news to get.
Congratulations, well deserved. I read that book for the first time because this is how I was as a young man. If someone said, "Oh, young men should read Catcher in the Rye. I said, then under no circumstance will I read Catcher in the Rye. So when I was 40, I finally read Catcher in the Rye. I said, my God, what a great book. And they said, every young person should read To Kill a Mockingbird. So I said, under no circumstances am I going to read To Kill a Mockingbird. Until I was 42 or something, I read it, and I loved it. Of course. And you know what was an interesting story about that? She was good friends. You know who her very good friend is while she was writing that?
No. Oh, Truman Capote. Yeah.
Truman Capote. And she was living in New York, and some wealthy somebody, some patron of the arts, she was a young woman, you know, remember. She was in her 20s, maybe she was, but she was a young woman when she was writing that. Found out about her, maybe got a glimpse of the book, and she had been working, I don't know, some job. I'm probably butchering the story, but I know this much is true. The patron said, you need to write, stop working, and she supported her to finish that book.
Wow, I wonder if I can find that person.
Wouldn't we all? All right, so promotion. Speaking of promotion, that's something that, oh, God, if you talk to writers, this is on everybody's mind, isn't it? Really big and small. Everybody's trying to untangle the promotion yarn knot and figure out exactly how to do this. Nobody really knows, but I know you've got a pretty cool promotion going for Murder One, do you not?
Yeah, no, I actually do. It started last Monday. It's sort of a 2-week promotion. I think it's going to run through the end of this week, where you know, Simon & Schuster has made Murder One available by ebook for $1.99. Never really done that. I've never had that done for me before, and I don't think the company has ever really done that before. You know, it's one of those difficult situations where you're right. Everybody's trying to figure out what's the best way to promote your work and what's the best way to get it out there and to get people to pick up your work and give it a try. And you know, and this is one of those opportunities that some publishers are trying. It's, you know, give this guy a try. It's only $1.99. You know, you can't even buy a soda pop at a fast food place for that. And then, you know, if you like him, give his other stuff a try. And I've already had several emails just this week alone saying, you know, I picked up Murder One and I loved it, and I've gone and I've downloaded all the rest of your books, or I, you know, gone and picked up you know, your other books, or I pre-ordered The Conviction, which is my next in the David Sloan series, the fifth in the David Sloan series, which is coming out June 12th. So, you know, it's been great, and I kind of have made this a real grassroots, you know, effort. I asked some author friends of mine if they would, you know, kind of help spread the word, and gosh, I mean, you know, so many wonderful people. Steve Barry is a good friend, and he spread the word, and Tess Gerritsen, and John LaSquaw, and, you know, Sheldon Siegel, and, you know, about literally Diana Gabaldon, about 50 authors have really stepped up for me. You know, who enjoy my work and who know how hard I work at it, and I'm really grateful to all of them. So,
and you know what I love about that, Bob, and I really think that this is true, and that writing is such a solitary business, certainly in terms of what we do. You know, there's no getting around it unless you work in a team, and until you give it to your editor and your agent and publicist and so on, it's just you there by yourself doing it. But my experience with the writing community is that we are a very generous group, that with a few exceptions, with very few exceptions, and I really haven't met them, I've just heard about them, people understand, in a way, the pie is not limited, what's the expression, rising water, what's this about rising water floats all boats? I don't remember the expression.
Yeah, no,
everybody benefits,
I know what you're saying.
That we support each other and everyone benefits from it, and it's not... And I'm sure there's competition around awards and such, but overall, my experience of the writing community is one of real generosity and support, and just what you described.
I've never had anything but the support of my colleagues. It's truly amazing how generous people are with their time. And you're absolutely right. It's not a matter of, you know, geez, I made the New York Times bestseller list. Now it's time to pull up the ladder.
Right.
You know, you can't pull up the ladder because you never know what's going to hit and what people are going to love and what they're going to want to read. And the most important thing is just reading. You know, if people are just reading books then you know they're gonna pick up books to read, and
yeah.
So there's no limitation out there on, gee, I'm only gonna buy 2 books a year, or I'm only gonna read 3 books a year, and so it's not gonna be yours. The more people are reading, the better off we all are. I mean, there's been that big dialogue about ebooks and what the impact is gonna be, and you know, so many people will, you know, not go to a bookstore necessarily. It's not on their list of things to do. But if they have a Kindle or a Nook or an iPad, they'll download 5 books before they go on their trip to Hawaii or their trip to Mexico.
Right.
You know, and it's 5 books that you know, that particular author would not have sold. So, you know, I think it's all about people reading, and there is no limit on how much people will read.
Absolutely. Well, Paula Lanier, does that name sound familiar? She says, congratulations, Bob. And then she also says, a rising tide lifts all boats. Thank you, Paula.
Hey, Paula's
a great person.
I
couldn't pull it out at all. You know, it reminds me of when I was I used to run track. We have a couple things in common. I know you did sports as a young man. You played baseball, did you not?
Played baseball and basketball, yeah.
Right.
Paula, by the way, Bill, was a track star at the University of Indiana.
Oh, no kidding. Ooh.
Yes, she was.
Well, okay, so she can identify with this. I ran track very competitively in high school. I did some in college before I tore my hamstring. But my experience was, yes, I was competing against these other young men, but strangely, I always felt a kinship for everyone, both my teammates and the people I was competing against, because my feeling was ultimately the only one I was competing against was myself. They were really there. I mean, yes, I won if I ran faster than them, but it was me against myself. It was me getting myself to run as fast as I could, me running as fast as I could despite my exhaustion. And we were all going through that. We all lined up at the same starting line. We all faced the same fear, the same challenge. And in that way, I felt such a sort of fraternity with them, even though they were my competitors, technically. And I actually... And the one thing I missed the most when I left track was that experience with those other young men. I quite enjoyed it. It's not the same as a team sport. It's a little different where you're really squaring off against that other team. But when those individual sports, it reminded me of writing almost in that way, in that that shared challenge that we do it in different ways, but it remains the same challenge that everybody's facing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you're talking about is respect. You know,
yeah.
you're basically gaining people's respect, and you know, it sounds trite, but I've always told my kids and about my career, it's not about how much money I make, it's about the respect of my peers and the respect of my audience, and that's more important to me. I think because if you gain someone's respect by what you do, you'll make money at it. But vice versa is not true. You know, if you're not well respected, people aren't going to go out and buy your books. People aren't going to go out and support you. So, you know, the best way to earn that respect is to let people know that you're not just mailing in your work. I mean,
right.
That you're putting out the best book you can possibly put out that particular year. And
right.
That's always the goal. The goal is never to write the same book twice or to, gee, I had a hit with this book, so I'm going to try to write it again. You know, the goal is to try to write the best book you can that year and even to make it better. Because you never know what, when, you know, you sit down, okay, I got to come up with a book for the next year, right? It's very rare that you have any, you know, any sense of how good it's going to be. And even after you write it.
Nobody knows. Bob, I mean, some of my favorite stories in talking to writers who have won numerous awards, been number one in the New York Times, how they, in the middle of a book, you know, Judy Blume, this is a story Lewis Sackar told me, but Judy Blume told him that at the end of every book she's finished, she feels like, I have no idea if anyone's going to like this.
Yeah, I mean,
she's written 100 of them.
You do. And you have terrible self-doubt.
Of course,
you know,
you don't know.
Oh God, you know, and
you don't know.
You don't, and especially if you're like me, where you know you're not inclined to let people read your work as you go along.
No.
You kind of, it's one of those things where you hit the send button to your editor and you hold your breath.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and it's for the next couple of days or so, it's a terrible feeling.
Oh God, you know what? I was thinking about the respect thing, and you know what it is? It is what I call. Physics of love, which is the reverse of the physics of the material world. So if I give you a dollar, I have one less dollar. If I give you my coat, I have one less coat. But if I have some, if I have love and I give it, I have more of it. And the same is true of respect. If I want respect, this is what I try to teach my boys. If you want someone's attention, give them attention. You want someone's respect, give respect. And as a writer, you give respect by doing just what you described, by putting your full attention on the work, and that's showing the respect not just to the work but to the reader by saying, I respect the fact that you are taking the time, to, you're spending money and committing your time to this experience, that you're putting yourself into my hands, and to that end, I will give you the very best I can do. And I think that if you bring that intention to it, it will, the respect, the love, the money, whatever it is you feel you need will come back to you. I really do. I think it's
I totally agree with that. I mean, I completely agree with that. And you'll see it if people think you're not. You know, I every once in a while I'll get an email. Most of the emails I get from on my website and are always, you know, very wonderful and nice to get.
Sure.
But every once in a while I'll get an email where somebody said, you know, you got this gun wrong. You obviously didn't do your research.
God.
And you know, and what they're basically saying is you disrespected me because you,
right.
you didn't. And nothing could be farther from the truth.
No.
I mean, I know one writer out there who swears he does absolutely no research. He makes everything up. And that's Harlan Coben. Now, I've heard him say that. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But I've heard him at conferences say he makes everything up. It's fiction, and he, et cetera. But, you know, most of us, myself included, do a tremendous amount of research.
Yeah, most
and
suspense
if you
writers
look,
kind of have to, I think.
Yeah.
I assume. I don't write suspense novels, but I would certainly want to do my homework.
Oh, you look at these books, and they're populated by, when the time you're done, they're populated by over 100 characters, and, you know, there's weapons involved in them, there's locations involved in them. I mean, you know, you do your best, but you can't possibly dot every I and cross every T. I mean, I heard a guy at a, when David Gooderson was out with Snow Falling on Cedars, I heard a guy at a reading raise his hand and say, you know, you have Venus in the northwest sky in October, and everybody knows Venus is in the, you know, northeast sky or whatever. So, and it, you know, Gooderson looked at him like, "Are you kidding me?"
But what
it comes back to, Bill, is it comes back to respect, and that's what you're showing your reader is, you know, I respect the fact that you're paying money to read my book, and or even just taking it out of the library to read it. I respect that you're taking your time when you could be reading another book, and I'm
right.
going to try to give you as an enjoyable experience as I can.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking about – so I'm going to be doing – I know you do a lot of teaching, and I'm going to be doing some – starting. I've been doing more teaching lately, and I'm going to be teaching a memoir class this Friday. And I was thinking about the old rule of – first rule of fiction writing is what, show, don't tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know – that's because two things occurred to me, and I was thinking about it today because I knew I was going to be talking to you. The first thing that occurred to me is you do that in part because your reader's going to make up their own mind no matter what. You know, if you tell them the character is angry instead of showing them, you don't give them the chance to make up their own mind about what angry is and let them decide for themselves if the character is angry. But you know what else it reminded me of? And this, to some degree, I think answers this conundrum of why are so many lawyers writing books? And you said to me, we're storytellers, which I think is true. But there's also this. When you're in the courtroom, have you done courtroom work, actually?
I have. Not,
okay. So
not in
when
last
you're in the
10
courtroom,
years, but I did.
Right? You can't turn to the – if you're, say, a prosecutor, which I know you weren't, but you couldn't turn and say, look at that guy. Look how guilty he looks. Isn't he guilty? He's guilty. Come on. He's guilty. No. You have to present facts, which is what? Showing.
Yes.
No,
that's so you're
doing
absolutely
with
right,
readers, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Now, there's an interesting thing about that. I think sometimes writers can get too hung up on the show don't tell. It's
yeah.
not possible to write a 400-page novel and
never tell. Yeah.
What really the key is not telling the important aspect of the scene. It's showing the important aspect of the scene. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, she walked in with she had blonde hair and a red dress on. That's fine.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, manipulate the situation
right.
where she has to look in a mirror and
right,
say,
right,
just
right.
her red dress. But it's what's important about the scene. What's the key element of the scene? That's the part that you want to show and not tell. And part of that is so that you don't take away from the reader's experience.
Yeah.
You know, the enjoyment of the reader is experiencing the story, not necessarily being told the story. I mean, how many times will you get emails from readers who say, I was so immersed in your book that I started it at 11 o'clock at night and I finished it at 4 in the morning.
That's a reader
who's immersed in the story.
Yeah.
That's a reader who's not being told a story. They're becoming a part of the story.
That's because reading is an active experience. It is, and I think I talked about this maybe last week, but it is not passive. In order for you to read, you have to imagine what you're reading. You can't just read the words. It has to play on the movie screen of your own imagination. And this, I think, is why it's such an intimate experience for readers and why they do get immersed, because they're not just reading it. They are seeing it. They are feeling it. They are living it. They are creating this this experience inside them. They're using you as the catalyst and you as the guide, but you're just pointing them towards the thing that they themselves are imagining, which in a way makes it, strangely, a creative experience, although it seems to be a purely passive one. But it's not, in some ways, more so than any other art form. And
well,
I think
you're right. I think it's the interactive. Yeah,
it's
the interactiveness. You know, you sit down to watch TV or a movie, and everything is broadcast to you.
Yeah.
You just sit there and you receive it, and you take it all in. But it's the rare movie that really can suck you into the point, like a book can, where it becomes interactive, where you do have to become a part of the story, and you do have to put yourself into the shoes of the character. And it is. It's a very intimate experience. And that's what makes this job so difficult, Bill, is, you know, you're trying to do more than show. You're trying to put a product out there that is going to make people laugh and cry and feel good and feel guilty and feel bad. I mean, all those emotions
right.
that you're trying to get a reader to feel, because you want them to have this interactive experience. And that's what makes it so difficult. I mean, it's difficult to do well. It's not difficult to write. Anybody can write, but it's difficult to write well.
Yeah, and you have to give up the illusion of control. I think that's one of the challenging things, is that you don't get to know. You know, you described that experience of emailing your book off to your editor, and to some degree the same thing happens when it goes out to the reading public. You don't ever know what will resonate with people, what they will see on the movie screens of their own imagination. And I'm sure you have had the experience where you have labored over certain scenes and no one seems to know it, and then you dashed off something else and suddenly all these people have said, oh, that was the one that I so liked, and you can't figure out why, but for some reason that resonated with them.
Yeah, and it's the same with the mistakes you make. The mistakes you make are always the ones that you think you know, and so you don't research it. You know, and those are the ones that people call you on. You know, but again, for the most part, I think people are appreciative. People can tell, you know, and we all know that. We've all picked up a book where we go, oh, geez, this author just mailed this in. And we pick up a book where we go, wow, this was really a great experience. And you know, readers are, you know, they're educated. Readers are smart, especially people that really, you know, reading is their pastime, who read, you know, 3-4 books a week. They know, and they don't want to feel like you disrespected them, and rightfully so. So, again, I always, you know, you talk about, you know, the experiences you teach your kids, and that's one I try to teach my kids, is it's much more important to gain people's respect, and that's what I try to do as a writer.
Yeah, and you know, I know you've always been an avid reader. How has your reading changed since you've become a professional writer?
Well, for one thing, I'm always reading books that I judge for the Edgar Awards, and I judge for other awards.
Wow.
So I always have to read, you know, a lot of the stuff that I might not pick up on my own.
Yeah.
But I try not to become that reader that is so critical they don't enjoy the experience. That's the thing
that's hard, Bob, writer has to shut up while you're reading, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, when you do this and you get an email from somebody who says, you know, you used a Glock 38 and Glock didn't make a 38, so I'm not reading the rest of your book. You almost feel sorry for that person, because, you know, you realize they are so critical that they can't possibly enjoy the experience.
Who are they
going to
read? Somebody's
right.
going to do something
wrong. And I feel like, so when I'm reading, I try not to do that. Yes, there are times when I'll say, boy, the author skipped point of view here, or the author is doing a lot of telling or whatever. But for the most part, I try to say to myself, you know, am I enjoying this experience? Is this, do I like the characters? Am I into the characters? Am I enjoying the journey? Do I feel like the author is taking me on this ride? And if they are, I'll give them a chance and I'll go along that journey, because, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be, you know, entertaining. And, you know, the minute you start being so critical that it's no longer entertaining, then you could become bitter and jaded, and I don't want to do that. So, I definitely see things that I didn't see before I started writing professionally, and I do pick up the mistakes that are in, you know, novels. But I try not to let that take away from the enjoyment of reading a good book. Because you're right, every author makes mistakes.
Oh,
there's not a perfect book out there. And
not.
If you do that, you're gonna miss out on a lot of really great books.
And you've got to have compassion. You know, I think the more I write and the more I mature as a writer and as an author, someone who shares his work with other people, strangers included, the more compassion I have for writers and the understanding that it takes just as much work to write a book that doesn't succeed as one that does. I mean, you can work like crazy on a book and not have it come together, and it can take just as much work, of course, to write a book that is not meant for me, that I might sit down to read, and the questions that the author is asking in that book or the answers they're getting to that question might not be my own, and so it might not be a book that I'm interested in, or they may be, their idea of suspense might not be my own, or mystery might not be my own. But that doesn't mean that they didn't put work into it and that they deserve the same compassion because they're doing the same thing I am. It doesn't matter whether it was meant for me or not. And so I used to be so bitter about writers who were writing books that didn't amuse me, as if they had set out purposefully, strangely, just to waste my time or something. But,
yeah,
of course, you know, no one, I hope, ever does such a thing.
No. It's... You have to suspend your disbelief and go on the journey and enjoy it and you know, cut the writer some slack. And I'm not saying, you know, you have to continue reading a book you're not enjoying, or if you feel like you're not, you know, you weren't respected. But for the most part, you're right. I mean, I always tell people, go out and celebrate after you've written the book. Don't wait for it to be published. Go out and celebrate after you've written it, because it's a tremendous endeavor to write a 400-page novel. I mean, it's really a lot of work. And, you know, it's a passion, and I love to do it. I can't think of anything else I love to do more than to get up and get to my desk, and especially when I'm actually writing the next novel, as opposed to plotting it or outlining it or researching it. When you're in that flow, and it's like Diana Gabaldon says, you know, when the muse hits and you're just feeding it, it's a tremendous feeling. It's a great feeling. But that's only the tip of the iceberg, you know.
Yeah.
It's the huge chunk of ice below the surface that people don't see, that goes into creating something, you know, 400 pages long that you want to be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got just about a minute left here, Bob. Tell me again. Let our readers know they should look for The Conviction.
Yeah, The Conviction
June 12th,
comes out
is that right?
June 12th. Yeah, June 12th, 2012.
David Sloan is back at it.
David Sloan is the fifth. Jake is in trouble in a mountain boot camp.
He's got trouble this time, I know.
And Sloan's got to get him out. He's either going to save him, or they're all, you know, going to die. And you know, if you want to get a feel for it, like I said, Simon Schuster's got a tremendous promotion. It's Murder One for $1.99. You can just get on Google or whatever, and you'll find it. And you know, I think, like you said, with the Harper Lee Award, I feel real good about that book, and I'd love for people to get out and read it.
Well, I'm sure they will. Bob, thank you so much for coming on. Best of luck with the award and with The Conviction, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Really appreciate it.
No problem. And thank you, everybody, for listening in today. Another great show. You can always count on Bob for a discussion about suspense and writing and craft. Remember, heard him say it, do what you love. He loves to write. So write what you love, and you really cannot possibly go wrong. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.